Thanks for listening to the Nice Podcast. I'm Dave Delaney. If you haven't noticed, we've taken a little bit of a hiatus over the last several months. A big revelation was found. I have ADHD, and that explains a whole lot. And of course, naturally, as a veteran podcaster, I started another podcast all about it. And it's called ADHD Wise Squirrels. And you can find it at wisesquirrels.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Just search ADHD Wise Squirrels. Pop over and have a listen. Let me know what you think. Thanks.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Embrace change. Seek it out. It stretches you. It makes you uncomfortable, but that's how we all grow.
Nice.
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 Nice. Nice with Dave Delaney.
Welcome to the Nice Podcast, all about communication, collaboration, and becoming better leaders. I'm your host, Dave Delaney from futureforth.com, where we help fast-growing tech companies retain talent, improve culture, so you can have happier, more connected teams. Today, I'm speaking with David Briggs. Dave is the regional president of Fifth Third Bank. Dave, welcome to Nice.
Dave, I guess it's the Dave and Dave show today. Thanks for having me.
The Daves I know. That's right. That's right. Have you ever heard the, did you ever watch Kids in the Hall by any chance? Canadian?
I absolutely do remember that. Yeah.
Do you remember the Daves I know?
I don't remember that dynamic of the show.
Okay. You've got to, look it up on YouTube later. The Kids in the Hall, the Daves I know. It's
the Daves.
Yeah. It's a pretty catchy song. And
Great.
So Dave, let me begin by asking, what is the nicest thing someone has done for you recently?
Oh, look, I am blessed to have been living and working and residing and growing kids here in Tennessee since 2000. And so just by a factor of living here, Dave, nice things happen every day. But I would have to say, from a specific answer to your question, I had the privilege of going out to Telluride for a boys' ski trip in early February that my wife surprised me with. So that was a pretty nice gesture from her. I don't know if it was so much that she wanted to do something nice or she just wanted to get me back out of the house. But either way, I was a net benefactor of it, net beneficiary of it.
Yes, that's awesome. That's great. And what a great place to ski. I've been dying to ski. I haven't skied in like a good few years now. Well, I did once a couple of years ago back in Ontario where I'm from, but, it's been a while.
Well, we've learned and experienced so much in the pandemic and so much, honestly, Dave, that I think we took for granted going into it, or I certainly did. One of the things is travel. One of the things is being able to ski. We were able to go even during the pandemic a couple times, but it was different. Slopes were limited. Restaurants were limited. The logistics of travel, we all know, has been changed. So what used to be a much more straightforward endeavor has been further complicated. But it's nice that this year was a step much closer to normalcy in that regards.
Yeah, it was. We went over to Switzerland over the holidays and my brother lives over in Bern, and he took us all sledding. I forget the name of the mountain, but it's basically like the tallest mountain, I think, in Europe. And yeah, and I mean, that was a ski hill, but we actually went sledding and it was fun. This epic sledding, like an hour and a half to the bottom of the mountain.
Wow.
You know, I'm used to like a 5 second run, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. Cool experience.
Yeah. It was pretty wild. So let me ask you, who was someone especially nice to you in your career?
I've been a career banker, Dave. I've been in the industry for 33 years. Mm. I have been blessed with an abundance of managers, bosses, mentors. Matter of fact, for whatever reason, just kind of went through a list not too long ago. And I've reported to 25 different people throughout my career. And everyone has been different. Everyone has been unique, but I have just been privileged with having great relationships through that. But if I had to pick out one, I spent 27 years at Bank of America, who took great care of me. And then in 2016, I decided to have a significant pivot and I left to follow an executive that had been at Bank of America over 35 years and left during the Great Recession, Dave, and started a bank. And it had culminated in 2016 to where he had grown in South Florida and in the Carolinas and was ready to really launch in earnest Tennessee. So I came on board there, a gentleman by the name of Gene Taylor, who's just an exceptional coach, mentor, friend, and was really exceptionally nice to give me that opportunity. Which was a huge step after 27 years at the same company.
Yeah, that is huge. What made you stay at the same company for 27 years?
It's a great question. In a myriad of aspects, one, challenge, two, a sense of loyalty, three, friendships that are spawned throughout our work relationship. Mm. You know, one of the things that I just think is I talk to my kids, they both graduated college last spring and entered the workforce. And so that, among other relationships, you know, mentoring and discussing what you look for in a company, you know, one of the great privileges is at some point in time, a work relationship magically trips over to personal friendships. Mm-hmm. And after 27 years, I had a lot of personal friendships that were through there. But as we all know, so that in combination, as well as they afforded me a great opportunity for change. Even though I was with one company, I moved six times in 10 years in North Carolina before we settled in 2000, all a variety of commercial banking roles. And then in 2005, we started a focus on government sector, and I had the chance to really lead that and learn and meet teammates outside of the geography that I've been working. And then in 2009, after Bank of America had purchased a longtime monoline credit card company, MBNA, that had incredibly deep partnership relationships of co-branded cards. So, Dave, if you think about any college and university that has a co-branded card, multiple retailers, airline co-branded cards, MBNA was the engine behind the vast majority of those. So I had the opportunity to go and help bring the rest of the Bank of America enterprise into those relationships. Great amount of fun, great challenge, except I was on planes, trains, and automobiles for literally 250 days a year, each and every year. And my kids were in their teenage years. My wife said, enough, you got to stop traveling so much. So then the Bank of America afforded me the opportunity to lead banking centers for Tennessee and the bulk of North Carolina for a year. And then after that, I had the opportunity to pivot into private wealth management. So a snippet of my journey at Bank of America afforded me a lot of different diverse opportunities, even though it was one, under one umbrella, so to speak. And then just to finish my career track, as I mentioned prior, I joined Gene Taylor at Capital Bank, recruited 14 teammates over 9 months. And then we sold the bank to First Tennessee, First Horizon, stayed on with them for a little over a year to help see the merger through, and then took a pause, gathered some introspective and perspective. And was enjoying some time off until Dave, my wife, made it abundantly clear one of us was going back to work, and she made it clear it wasn't going to be her. So I had the privilege of joining a lot of former teammates that I had worked with over the years that were over at Fifth Third. I've had the privilege now of being over at Fifth Third since 2018.
A couple of things that stood out to me in that, especially in your answer to you know, why you stay there for I think it was 25 years, you said?
27.
Excuse me, 27 years. A couple of things that stood out to me, and these are things that I focus on with my company, Futureforth, and the consulting I do, is on one is on relationship building and how, you know, part of the challenges these days, especially with businesses that are remote, in part probably due to the pandemic, or that work even in a hybrid sort of model, but allowing your, especially when you're team members are diverse and they're all virtual and they're all remote, is how you can build a culture and yep. and trust and loyalty to a brand or to a business when your team members don't actually meet in person. And you know, this part of what I've been talking a lot about lately with potential clients as well is about, and some clients, about doing retreats or doing, you know, at least offsites to bring everybody together, because you need to be in person to build relationships. You can't do like a lot, even long distance romantic relationships only last for so long. I mean, it's just, you have to meet up. What are some of your thoughts on that? Cause you talked about building these relationships and friendships that have grown, you know, through your career over that 27 year span. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts.
Yeah. No, you're so right, Dave. And like, again, as we mentioned a couple of times already, the pandemic taught us a lot. And one thing, I give corporate America an A plus on being able to pivot swiftly and get jobs done. By and large, I talked to, you know, one of the privileges of being a banker, Dave, is I'm under the hood of so many different businesses across so many different industries, across so many different geographies. But a common theme was many of them pulled off work that they never thought they'd be able to handle remotely or virtually prior to the pandemic. So the pandemic forced us out of our comfort zone and to do our jobs. So can we get jobs done remotely? Absolutely. But how do you develop talent? We are such a collaborative industry. Our company is all about collaboration and teaming. We're all about bringing in new folks to the workforce, to the company. And there is no way, in my opinion, you can develop talent as effectively than being in person. And so does that mean you have to be in an in-person environment? No. But do you have to supplement it with having gatherings, having retreats, having elements of catalyst of where you can be a person? I think you absolutely have to. You just can't. Relationships happen over time and being with people in person. And you know, one of the adages I used to use in the past is, if you ever really want to get to know a teammate, go travel with them. You get stuck in an airport for 4 hours with somebody. Matter of fact, our teammate that runs our client support group, she and I got stuck in LaGuardia Airport for 8 hours, and neither one of us have ever been the same. you really get to know somebody when you have that amount of time idle, particularly if you're stuck in LaGuardia, if any of you have experienced that dynamic.
So I have, yes.
No substitute for being in person. And then the other thing I would just mention on just the whole being back in the office dynamic, you know, banks in general, and certainly at Fifth Third, we talk about our banks prosper when our communities prosper. And honestly, I never really set a lot of introspection on that until the pandemic, when I realized the place where I grab a burrito 3 times a week really relies on me being involved in the community. A place that I would go and grab coffee and meet people went out of business during the pandemic. And it was real in your face, Dave, of, hey, it really does matter us being together and being out in the marketplace. And one of the particular aspects I like about being in Tennessee, and particularly in Nashville, I describe Nashville frequently as it's a big, small town, and it matters being out seen at lunch. I was at a breakfast this morning. networking, and I ran into two other tables of folks that I needed and connected and saw. That stuff matters and makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a book about it. My book is called New Business Networking, and it was about, in part, about moving from Toronto to Nashville in 07 and not knowing a soul here, and how I networked to grow my own career in this city. And I mean, there are other stories and examples in there, but so I'm a big proponent of networking nicely, like doing it the right way. And it sounds like you are too. Tell me also, I mentioned two things that stood out to me about your tenure there, for that 27 year tenure. You mentioned, so one about friendship and about building relationships, as we've covered here. The other side of it was about the company and Gene being open to letting you, moving you from into different roles or into different departments or divisions. And I find that is also something that really helps with retention, is that, team members either, they need to, for whatever reasons, maybe they're just bored in the role they're in now, but they're a great teammate. So are there strategies or ways that you practice this with your own team members now by, trying to be on the lookout for when these opportunities come up that you can actually offer them and it doesn't necessarily have to be even a promotion or a pay raise, even just moving someone into a different department can greatly help with retention. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I think, like so many other aspects in business, Dave, it all comes down to process and discipline. So we have a very disciplined process here at Fifth Third. Matter of fact, ironically enough, we have a talent planning session here for our Tennessee teammates this afternoon, where all of the business line of leaders will get together. We have gone through, each one of our teammates fills out a profile on his or her background, as well as what desires they have for future career aspirations. And then we also, as leaders, sketch in the development plans that we're working on with each one of these respective teammates. So that's part of the process. And what we will do this afternoon is talk about person by person. Where are they in their journey? Are they in the right spot? What could we show them that would expand them, push them out of their comfort zone? I had a teammate years ago that I was catching up with, Dave, and he remarked of, just was asking, how are things going? He said, I lost such and such to this other department. Mm-hmm. And I said, congratulations. He goes, yeah, thanks a lot, Wiseacre. I'm serious. He goes, well, no, that was bad. She was my workhorse. I said, no, that's great. I said, to me, as you're going through figuring out what your main accomplishments for this year, I would put at the top of your list that this teammate grew under your leadership, under your role, and was able to do something different. That's good news. Mm-hmm. But I think what we find out is people that are saddled with that old misperception, for lack of a better term, Dave, I think are ones that aren't constantly out recruiting for new talent. And they're so fearful that if somebody leaves their organization, that they're going to be saddled with an empty chair and, oh my goodness, who do I put in it? Well, if you're constantly recruiting talent internally and externally, you always have a slate of folks of, you know what? If we're successful of somebody moving into a new role, here's a slate of folks that can backfill. We had a teammate just this morning announce that she was moving from one role in our middle market team to one of our large corporate roles. And it's going to be a great stretch for her in expansion and use of talents. And guess what? We have been going through a plan to give her the skills and experience to be able to do more. So that's all worked out. And we've actively had an eye out on, knowing this may happen, who else can we backfill with? And we actually may wind up bringing two new individuals that we've been recruiting externally that we're so impressed with, and says, this investment is all about investing in your talent. And fortunately, Fifth Third has been very gracious to us here in Tennessee of saying, you're a growth market. It's all about talent. If you find two really good players, even though you're only backfilling one, hire both of them. So we're most likely going to do that. So to me, it's just a win-win when that occurs. And the last thing I'll mention on that is, years ago, when I first moved to Tennessee, I had an associate that decided they needed to leave the company. And I sat down and said, well, help me understand, why are you going to XYZ? And she said, because there's no change over there. And I said, wait a minute. First off, you really believe that? Because what business doesn't have to change in this dynamic environment in which we all live, work, and operate? And number two, if you really do, how long is that company going to be around? So again, I'll go back to my kids just having started the work world. I have told them, embrace change, seek it out. It stretches you. It makes you uncomfortable, but that's how we all grow.
Yeah. And it's a great point, because by seeking change, and, you know, it's something I talk about a little bit too, is about, you know, kind of accepting, or, you know, nobody wants failure. Nobody wants to fail, but at the same time with failure, I mean, if you're failing, we'll use the skiing analogy, right? If you're not wiping out sometimes, then you're obviously not trying anything new.
That's right. Great point.
Yeah. So, I think that's,
among some of my other bizarre hobbies, I've had the privilege of racing bicycles for 20 years. And one of the things I enjoy about it is, of course, the races are great. We're all competitive freaks, and it's great to be able to actually go toe to toe. And it's not so much trying to win. It's trying not to lose is probably even more motivating.
Right.
But one of the things I like about it is the discipline of preparation. Mm. And you just can't show up to an event and not have it put in the hours or the training. And one of the things I like about the training is you progress doing intervals so that by design, you get to a point where you fail. So whether it's training for cycling or in the weight room, you know, unless you get to a point where you put enough weight on the bar that you actually can't do another rep, you don't know how far you can go. And that's okay. You learn from failure. You grow from failure.
Right.
Do you ever go out and say, all right, the most I've ever put on the bar is 300 pounds, and I did that twice, so I'm going to put 400 pounds on. Well, you know you're going to fail on that.
Right.
So I don't think you ever go into a role going, oh, yeah, let's put Dave in this. We know he's going to fail. Go, hey, we know this is a stretch for Dave, but he's been stretched before. We all grow when we're stretched. Let's go in there. And oh, by the way, if it's too much, let's grab him, pull him above water, give him the tools to try to be successful. But at the end of the day, if it's not, it's okay to say, you know what? We tried it. It didn't work. And then bring him back to a role that they're comfortable in. And that's okay. So without taking risk, we'll never reach our full potential.
Do you open up that dialogue with your team members to, you know, I'm asking this for our listeners who might work for smaller organizations or run smaller companies too, but of, you know, whether it's promotion or just offering, a team member a role, like a different role or a different division or something like that. Tell me a little bit more about the process of selecting somebody to perhaps be offered to move into a different direction. Like, how do you first detect that that's something that you even should be doing for a specific person? And then how do you have that conversation with them to see if this is something they'd like to do?
Great, great question. And I think it comes back down to, you have to be open and transparent and communicate. And again, when our kids were trying to figure out where they were going to go work, and they were having a bunch of interviews, I said, guys, you know, you have to do some research going into it. And Dave, I've yet to pick up for a publicly traded company the annual report to shareholders, where somewhere in the letter to shareholders, the CEO or chairman, whoever's authoring it, doesn't say, oh, and by the way, we have the best people. I've yet to see somebody that says, you know, we kind of believe in the bottom of the barrel or mediocre performers. Mm-hmm. Said nobody ever. So, you know, everybody can't have the talent, all the top talent. So how do you do it? And I often say that people vote with their feet. And if you've got a good culture, they will stay around. So I think folks, first and foremost, when they're thinking about where they're going to work, my guidance is ask a lot of questions of that company. What's the day in the life of? What's your turnover been? How's that compared to the industry? Where do you receive talent from? How often do you promote? So one is, I think, just knowing the culture of where it's at. And then secondly, once you're doing the role, it's up to us as leaders to sit down with our teammates. Hey, where are you? How's it going? What do you like? What don't you like? Where do you see yourself in 2, 3, 5 years? And by the way, there is nothing wrong with saying, you know what? I love what I do and I want to just be better at it. And I want to be a pro in position. Absolutely great. I think sometimes you can have cultures that there's a balance here, Dave. You always want to, in my opinion, look and have an opportunity to stretch and grow. But there's other folks we've all seen that the minute they land in a position, they're too excited or anxious about what's next to really sink in and learn in the role that they're doing. So you have to have a balance on excelling in what you're doing, but always with a line of sight of not where the puck is, but where the puck's going. And it starts fundamentally with open and honest assessments of your skill set, where you have gaps, and then open and honest discussion of where we can develop to improve those gaps. And then with that, an open and honest dialogue of what are the potential roles and how would that potentially look like.
Is there a percentage of time that you dedicate, or whether, or maybe this is just something you do naturally, to focusing on your people, on your teammates, you know, on your staff? Because you've got a pretty busy schedule, I would imagine. Yeah. A very busy schedule, and you're balancing a lot of balls, I imagine, or spinning plates. Yeah. Or however you want to say it. Is there a percentage of time that you focus, or how do you remind yourself, I've been working on client acquisition and making sure we're bringing on new clients so much that I need to like shift gears here and think about our teammates? You know, is it something you're mindful of, or how does that work?
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
It's a great question. I'm kind of chuckling here as you're teeing this question up, Dave, because one of the that I've been receiving coaching on, and it's valid, is being more granular and detailed in my calendar planning and prescriptive of where I do spend time. I think a lot of us that come from more of a sales background fall prey to a disproportionate amount of time working in the business, chasing deals, getting an email and going, oh, hey, somebody's stuck and let me jump in and help alleviate this roadblock so that we can get this client onboarded, do more business, win more names, versus working on the business, which is strategic planning, the personal people development side of the equation. But saying all that, part of there is a process I mentioned earlier, obviously this talent planning discipline process that we have here at Fifth Third, that ensures that we are spending time on our talent and development plans and having ongoing dialogues with our teammates in that regard. We've also heard, you know, whatever analogy or snippet you want to use, but get the right people on the bus We've all heard that, and it's so true. And what's fun is when you do get the right people on the bus, driving it is really easy. By the way, when you get the wrong players on the bus, it's no fun at all. And I've been very fortunate that I have an incredible group of leaders that we have amassed. They understand where we're going. They understand our success measures, and they're driving the people, the recruiting of people, and driving it. So overall, it makes my job really easy. But what I enjoy doing is beyond running the process and then doing my part to recruit talent for my Rolodex or accelerate revenue cycles by my Rolodex of company owners, high net worth families, individuals, et cetera. But I just like roaming the halls, popping in door to door on a daily basis when I'm in the office, or if I'm not, I'm on the phone. Hey, how you doing? What's going on? Everything going well? No agenda other than just being spending time. It was kind of like those teachable moments with your kids. Mm. You never can really chart out when it's going to happen. It happens when you spend enough time with your family. So the same thing, you never can really figure out when that true coachable, teachable moment is with your teammates, unless you're spending enough time with them and something pops up and go, here it is. When this meeting with this company is over, I saw two specific things as illustrating exactly what I've been trying to talk to them about, but you see it live and in color and it gets amplified because they just saw it. But that never happens if you don't spend time out with your teammates.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's a great way to be to, making yourself, just by walking the halls and popping in to say hello. I mean, that also makes you a more, a friendlier, more approachable leader, because oftentimes fear can slow things down and definitely, affect communication internally as well. So it's great to be that way.
Yeah, Dave, and just kind of on that note as well, I really view successful leaders as one that are really there for their team to alleviate roadblocks, give them the tools they need to be successful. And if anything, we work for them, not the other way around. Mm. And actually, just personally, I've never cared for the phrase, I work for somebody or somebody works for me. First off, we work for our clients, our customers, and our shareholders, if we're going to pick something, in my opinion. And if anything, myself is being privileged of being the president of Fifth Third for Tennessee. The folks that work in Tennessee don't work for me. I work for them. And if I'm being successful, I'm finding out what gaps they have, what barricades or barriers they have, and doing the best from my position, my seat, my chair, my internal network to solve those challenges or problems so that they can be even more successful with their clients and customers. And then if they're successful in clients and customers, we're going to be successful as a marketplace. We're going to be successful as a company, and I'm going to be very happy.
Yeah, no, all things make sense to me. And, it impresses me that, you've been doing this for so long and staying with businesses, with specific companies or banks for so long as well. And I think in this day and age, you often hear like stats and information about the fact that like, don't expect to work for the same employer for your whole career. Yeah. I mean, you're going to jump and move around. But then I look at you and your career, and the fact that you've really stuck it out with a couple different banks through your career. And then I was also, reading about your dad and how he was a career guy in corporate for IBM. Yeah. And how long did he work with IBM for?
35 years.
Exactly. 35 years. That's great.
You say just a little snippet on that. So dad was obviously a very loyal person. And I got a phone call. I was probably 8-10 years into my journey at Bank of America, and a recruiter called me and we were chatting and went through my background, and their comment, Dave, was, you've been with one company too long. That shows you're stagnant and not nimble. And so I happened to be talking to my dad about that, who was a very calm, balanced person, but that got under his skin. And he said, that is absolutely wrong. You need to be loyal to a company. If you're loyal to a company, they'll be loyal to you. And stretch yourself internally and strive to be the best wherever you're at. And all of that is true. Now, I think that clearly when my dad started working in his career, people did have, it was frequent that folks had their entire career with one company.
Yeah, sure.
People were more loyal to their companies. Companies were certainly more loyal to their employees. And think about it, back in that generation, you didn't have a lot of job layoffs or reduction in force. And what it did is set huge shockwaves. So the paradigm of business has certainly shifted on that regard. Mm. But I think there's still a way. When people decide to change companies, and this can go both ways, Dave, we understand the equity somebody builds and their amounts of shares they hold in that company, or they're given through stock grants, options, et cetera. But you also have personal equity. And so when I decided it was time to leave B of A after 27 years, I had 27 years of personal brand equity built up at one company that was erased. By the way, that can sometimes be a good thing. Sometimes you need to erase brand equity.
Yeah.
But I think that's also a reason, typically, if somebody decides to leave a company to go to another one, why are they paid more? Well, you're taking more risk. You're wiping a slate clean, where if you're at a company a long time and something's in the gray area, and you call and say, hey, Dave, I know this opportunity we're working on is a little bit in the gray area. I really believe in this. I'm asking you to lean in on it. Going, all right, hey, I've worked with Dave a long time. He's got credibility. He's never led me astray. I'm going to lean in on that. If you call after being there for 6 months, going, all right, who's this guy? I haven't heard of him. I'm probably going to be less apt to lean in. So that's just, there's not a right or wrong with it. It's just a truth and a natural element of dealing with humans. And you just need to realize that.
You lived in France for 3 years. Where did you live?
I lived in a suburb of Paris. It was a great opportunity. I entered the third grade, went to the American School of Paris. My mom happened to be a Brit, Dave, and still had a fair amount of family in England. And so it afforded me a great opportunity, a relatively good young age, to get to know that side of the family. And also learn not only a different part of the States, obviously, but a different part of the world. And I was young enough that I remember it all, but I was still not old enough that I missed some of the unique elements of the high school relationships or the college prep standpoint, which would have been fine. But just as my course was, I think it happened at a really good age.
And parlez-vous français?
Un peu.
me too. French was
a big part of the curriculum. But I went to the American school, and this was interesting. Dave's back to kind of the skiing element a moment ago. And speaking of cultures, but the Parisian schools back then, I don't know if they still do this, but back then they would, the Paris schools would go to the Alps for a month with their school, with their teachers. And they would have school in the morning and ski all afternoon. So the American school trying to incorporate the culture, but I think listening to their client base, the parents who said, you can have my kid for a week, not a month.
Right.
We all with our school kids for a whole week, no school, but just full skiing with all your buddies and schoolmates and teachers. So I actually learned to ski in the French Alps, which was very privileged, I might add. But again, just kind of a unique characteristic. I don't know of any American school district that has that kind of element or arrangement, but it just showed very early on a much different cultural approach to something that in the States we wouldn't even think of doing.
Yeah. And I think that's really, that sounds like I want to go to school there. but that, you know, it sounds amazing. I mean, I think, and I asked you about that too, because I was curious about, your approach and understanding of, you know, other cultures. It's something that's very important to me. I mean, our kids have traveled, you know, I mentioned, you know, Switzerland over the holidays, but they've been to Iceland and they've been to Portugal, many European places. And not England yet, actually, strangely enough. And my mom, pardon me, my mom is also British. I say mom.
Yeah.
So she's from London, and like your mom, she grew up, during World War II. I'll give you this little side story. During 9/11, excuse me, my mom got very upset. I mean, of course, everybody was upset, obviously. But we're in Toronto, and you know, at the end of the attacks, when the attacks had settled, and we weren't sure, you know, it kind of, things had calmed in the sense that it didn't seem like anything else was going to happen. My mom was still panicking, and certainly at that point we concluded nothing bad was going to happen in Canada, in Toronto where we lived. But my mom kept freaking out about it, and I was like, Mom, like it's over. This isn't really going to affect us here. And she threw me off, because she said, Dave, you don't understand. I grew up during the Blitz, and I'd never even thought about that before. I never really realized. And your mom did too, right?
And you know, probably in your mind too, Dave, now seeing this very unfortunate Russian-Ukrainian situation unfold, and as they're talking to Ukrainians and they're talking about the bombings and missile strikes. I mean, just, we can't, 9/11 was probably the closest that we as Americans came to that dynamic and fear factor. And Dave, I know you said your kids haven't been over there yet, but have you done the Churchill Museum in London?
No, actually, I haven't.
So I highly recommend it. Matter of fact, just you and I sharing the background of our moms having grown up during the bombings. Mom would talk about just being under the dining room table with her parents and her sister. Her two brothers were all fighting in the war, and hearing the bombs and not knowing if one was going to hit the house. And you know, I just can't fathom going through that. And the Churchill Museum really shows it's the bunker of which Winston Churchill ran the war. And it's incredible, preserved, and incredible to see it. And then, of course, it does a great job of walking through the timetable and the iterations of the pre-war, during the war, and post-war. But it's just surreal to think about that dynamic. And really, again, how blessed we are to live in this country. But it also, I think, is always a reminder, and particularly with this current conflict, we never can take our national security for granted. It really is something that is precious, and you never can take it for granted.
Yeah, I posted something about that the other day, about my thoughts of, like, anytime I have stress about my business or any aspect of my life, I just have to, you know, think about what these poor people are going through in Ukraine right now, and well think said. Like, just put it in perspective, right?
Yeah. So well, I mean, said.
Yeah. It's my heart goes out to them. All right. Well, let's move to the lightning round, and then we will wrap up here. All right. So complete this sentence. Nice guys and gals finish
first.
Nice. What's a nice book that you recommend for the nice makers?
For the what makers?
The nice makers. That's our listeners here.
Boy, Who Moved My Cheats?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a great one. Actually, is that a book that your kids have read as they've been kind of thinking through their careers?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure I have mentioned or brought that to their attention, Dave, but I think what a simple, literally 5-minute read that's kind of back to your comment of putting things in perspective, whether it's seeing a conflict or just going back to kind of those young kindergarten years. we tend to overcomplicate and overinflate life at times, but its core is pretty basic, right? So, that one's, I think, right up there at one of the most simplistic but most impactful still at the same time.
Well, oftentimes things are, right? Like, it's interesting how, when you think about the simplicity of certain things, like when you kind of tear away all the aspects of things that kind of overwhelm, when you drill right into it, it's usually like a simple problem. I mean, it might have great, large stakes involved, but at the end of the day, it's, most problems are rather simple.
Look, we overcomplicate business. I will bet a large sum that any of your listeners that are putting together business plans or have put together a business plan didn't have there as an objective to become bureaucratic. So how do companies become bureaucratic? It happens. And so you have to work every day to annihilate it before it takes hold. Because once it does, it's hard to ever turn it back. But at its core, if you get good people, help them understand clearly what your objectives are and what your success metrics are, and then get out of their way, but hold them accountable, businesses run pretty darn well. But then we just wind up overcomplicating things.
Right, right.
If you're not careful and if you're not disciplined on that.
Yeah. How is Dave nice to himself?
By allowing myself to exercise.
Yeah. That's important. It's important. Yeah.
We all deal with stress differently. And to me, exercise is just a great stress reliever, motivator. Again, we're fortunate that most times of the year here in Middle Tennessee, we can get outside and enjoy fresh air and beautiful views. And so I think all that is a real benefit. And we have to stay well-rounded. We just can't. And one of the things I mentioned to my kids, you have to be disciplined and turn off work. If you decide that you want to send an email at 3:30 this morning, you can do it. And if I get it at 3:35 and respond to it, I can do that. But is that healthy? Is that good? Is that wise? No, you got to have balance. This is a marathon, not a sprint for our careers. And that doesn't mean that we don't work hard and be aggressive, but you have to have balance in life. And you have to have, in my opinion, exert to relieve stress and come back energized, recharged, and even a better teammate than without doing that.
Yeah, that's good. Do you encourage your team to do that?
Absolutely.
Sorry, go ahead.
And on that front, I actually will send out more nasty grams. And some of this is just as we're regaining traction coming out of the pandemic, day. But, obviously there was a period of time there where the pandemic didn't allow us to spend FaceTime with clients, COIs, talent. So we weren't spending money on that front. Now, as we're back out largely being able to play offense, for lack of a better term, I will send more nasty grams of, hey, check out so-and-so. They didn't spend much last month, which is a little bit foreign. Most companies have to be the other direction, but I think you have to spend money to make money. You have to be wise and disciplined of how you do it, but there's no better investment than a cup of coffee, a lunch, a drink in the afternoon, with really getting to know somebody and building that relationship, much like you hit on earlier, Dave.
Yeah. 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 It's all about planting those seeds when it comes to networking and just having these informal chats. I think it's really beneficial. Yeah. And as far as exercise go, you talked about racing bikes too. Do you do that still? Do you do that here?
I do too. Although it seems like the older I get, the faster everyone else seems to be. And fortunately, during the pandemic, we certainly missed effectively that whole 2020 season. But last year, there was a limited amount of quote unquote normal races. But Wednesday night out at the Nashville fairgrounds during the spring and summers, there's a race Wednesday night, which is a great way to break up the week and to get some incredible intensity. And you know, personally, I don't care how disciplined and regimented you are in intervals or putting your body under stress. There's nothing like the real thing of racing to replicate it. The only problem there is because it's a Wednesday evening, the classifications are limited. So I race with the young, real fast guys. And I know my objective is certainly not to win, but to hang on. And, and that just doesn't have that same fire of accomplishing that objective, although it's a realistic one, than trying to line up with my age bracket where I do feel like I have a chance to win. Although my age bracket, I'm no longer close to being the youngest in it. So, we're getting more and more of an influx of that talent. So every year that becomes harder too, but yeah, I do that. And then, I have a personal trainer that I go to the gym twice a week to really just kind of keep my core and joints moving as best they can as an old guy. And by the way, some of my best business networking has come from being on the bike or being in the gym. It's just another element where you tend to meet people.
Yeah. I think getting out and finding ways. Yeah. I work out with my wife and we have a trainer, but we do it virtually. I mean, we work out at home. But I think you're right. And I think now more than ever, like just getting back out, I've started attending some networking events and things like that around Nashville recently. And it's just, and speaking events as well, just doing that in person again has been fantastic.
Yeah, great.
But by the way, did you see a clip? I saw this clip recently and it blew my mind. And it was some cyclists racing. I'm not sure where they were, but they were definitely moving pretty quickly. And this guy, in the front of the, or this guy got, he was riding his bike and it's hard to explain, but he sort of basically lied down straight flat so that his like stomach was on his seat and his arms were holding and he bolted across the, I don't even know the name. What's the name of the guys who travel with you to protect like in front to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. He passed him.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know that particular clip, but right. Yeah, I've certainly seen folks that have unclipped, lay their belly on their saddle and just become a rocket ship going down.
Yeah.
If you tried that in a race, they probably would frown on you quite certainly. But it's amazing how aerodynamics play a difference. And, you know, like so many other things too, you know, back to skiing is just one example of many.
Yeah.
Or certainly golf. You can go out with some really good local cyclists, good local golfers, good local skiers, and they're great. But then you put them with the pros and it's a whole different level altogether. Yeah. One of the cool things about cycling is it is a little bit, it is a closed knit arena. And so I've had the privilege over the years of riding with a number of notable pros and it's a lot of fun to do that. But then it's also eye-opening with just seeing the power output these folks can put out. It's just incredible. And again, it's no different than going to a golf course and hitting your drive and then seeing the pros play there and go, my goodness, they hit it 60 yards further than my best drive. So it really is incredible, the exponential difference of a really good amateur to just even a average professional in their given sport.
I am not a golfer. However, it's something I'm interested in learning. And I'm pretty good, like, with putt-putt. I'm pretty good with that. And I remember my dad came to visit me once in Nashville. He's was an avid golfer and like bought the house on the green kind of deal. Of course, that season he pulled a sciatic nerve as soon as he moved in. So like the whole season he sat there watching people golf and couldn't golf. I've also disappointed him many times because I actually went to like some of the best golfing in the world and didn't golf. So I called him from like, St. Andrews, for example, I was there in Scotland and he's like, oh, tell me you're golfing. I'm like, no, Pebble Beach, called him from Pebble Beach. Are you golfing? No. He's like, oh God, like you're in the best places in the world.
A quick aside on that, my father, if you hadn't picked up on it earlier, not only was my dad, but a huge mentor and I miss him dearly.
Yeah.
He and mom had, when they retired, went down to Western North Carolina, spent a year orchestrating building their house. And then it was all set up for dad to play golf full time. And I called home one day and talked to my mom and finished with her and then asked to talk to dad. And she said, oh, he's out driving an ophthalmology van. I said, what? She said, ah, you'll have to ask him. And so I talked to him later. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, saw an ad in the paper. And not surprisingly, when guys, people are having their eyes fixed at the eye doctor, probably not a good idea for them to drive. And this is all before Uber and whatnot. So I just decided, he says, you know, I've always wanted to be a truck driver, but your mother wasn't going to let me do that. So I drive a couple times a week. And I said, wait a minute, what happened to the full-time golf? And he said, I realized quickly, golf is a whole lot more fun as a special occasion.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
The whole balance element, right? As much as we enjoy having fun, whether it's cycling, working out, skiing, golf, whatever our respective passions are, part of, I think, what makes it great is that you get to do it on a special occasion. We've often said, I can't imagine the pressure of the folks that play golf for a living, trying to do that and making a paycheck out of it would be just torture in my estimation, but that's why they're doing it. I'm not.
Yeah. Dave, if you had a billboard, what would it say?
I would say, work hard, play hard, play together.
I love it. I love it. Dave, how can people get a hold of you or learn more about what you do?
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. You can email me at david.briggs, B-R-I-G-G-S, at 53.com, david.briggs at 53.com. And happy to talk to anyone. And Dave, thank you for the opportunity to visit. I've thoroughly enjoyed our time here together. And I should have started this way, but welcome to Nashville. We are glad to have you cohabitate with us.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure chatting. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for listening to the Nice Podcast. Please leave a review if you enjoyed this episode at friend.nicepodcast.co. And you can find show notes, links to other episodes, and lots of other goodies over at nicepodcast.co. Music by Alistair Crystal at alistaircrystal.ca. We'll see you next time, and be nice. You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.